Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. And today my guest is Robin Dunbar, an anthropologist and evolutionary psychologist. He currently serves as Emeritus Professor of Evolutionary Psychology at the University of Oxford. He's probably best known for Dunbar's number, of which more later, but it's 150. Alongside his research, he's a prolific author, publishing numerous books across academic and popular science. His latest, Friends, Understanding the Power of Our Most Important Relationships, takes an in-depth look at the social side of human interactions. Robin, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Why are friends important?
Well, the short answer, I think, is they have a huge impact on your health and general mental state, actually. And friends, the number of close friends you have and the quality of those friendships has a bigger effect on your mental well-being and your physical health, even how long you live, than absolutely anything else your friendly neighbourhood GP can throw at you.
That's extraordinary. And I mean, we can't know that many people, and that's where Dunbar's number comes in. Tell us about that.
Well, Dunbar's number is simply the limit on the number of meaningful relationships that you can have at any one time. Of course, you can know more people than that, and the number is 150, as you mentioned. Well, at least that's the average. Some people a bit more, some people a bit less, perhaps. You can certainly know more people by sight, for example, or know them as acquaintances. But what I mean here is people who are kind of meaningful relationships. The relationship has history. You know where they fit into your social circle. They know where you fit into theirs. If you ask them to do a favour, they would, out of obligation to you, be willing to do it. And that's sort of the definition, really, of what a friendship is in this context. I should add that this includes family members. And people often say, well, I don't know that many friends. But the answer is, no, you're thinking of friends, but our definition includes extended family members, because essentially the relationship is the same.
So let's just drill down a little bit then into what counts as a friend.
I think in the end, the definition of a friend is someone who is a bit of a soulmate in some respects, and therefore somebody who is going to help you out if you ask. Now, friends come in different qualities, and that's perhaps the important thing to them, so that all our friends aren't of the same quality to us in those terms. We're actually surrounded by a series of what are really layers of friendship, running from our kind of best friends, if you like, what I always call the shoulders to cry on friends, because, you know, they are the ones that, no matter what happens, will always come and pick you up when your world falls apart. And sort of running out beyond that through what are known as the sympathy group, the affinity group, who are your kind of weekend barbecue friends. If you're going to have a big party in the garden on a nice sunny day, it's that group, affinity group, you would go for. Now, these layers, which fit within the 150, have very specific numbers. So your shoulders to cry on friends really amount to only about five people, usually a couple of close family members, a couple of close friends, and an odd one to make up the number. And then the next layer out, known as the sympathy group, is the about 15 people, if you're... And your sympathy group really is your kind of everyday social world. If you want to have a dinner party, or you want to go to a theatre with somebody, or go for a ramble in the countryside one Saturday afternoon, then that's where you would go to first. Your affinity group, your sort of weekend barbecue party group, numbers about 50 people, and the 150, which I sometimes describe as your bar mitzvahs, weddings and funerals group, because they're the ones who will turn up on those once-in-a-lifetime events, as it were. That's your 150.
And why is the number 12 important?
Well, somebody pointed out, in fact, in many ways, this is the origin of our whole understanding of the nature of friendships in these terms. Many years ago, some social psychologists pointed out that an awful lot of things occur in 12s. So, you know, obviously the number of people that serve on juries, the number of apostles, the team sports typically occur in sort of somewhere around that number. The size of inner cabinets tend to be around 12 in governments. There's something peculiar about that number, and they argued it's something to do with how familiar and, if you like, sympathetic you can be to other people, and that was the sort of limit. And it we've upgraded it a bit to 15, so it's in line with rugby teams, but only because that's the number that keeps coming up in our samples of that level of friendship. It's extremely stable. You know, we sometimes use the definition of all the people who, if they died tomorrow, you'd be genuinely upset about rather than simply sorry about. You'd be really upset. And that seems to come to this number, 12 to 15, something like that.
So how do we make and preserve friends?
I think the short answer is with great difficulty, for several reasons, actually. One, of course, is the important one, that you may be desperate to be friends with somebody, but whether they're interested and willing and indeed able to be friends with you depends on, you know, how many other friends they're committed to, what their social time available to them is, because friendships are extremely demanding in terms of time investment. So family relationships tend not to be so susceptible to this, but if you don't invest in friendships, they deteriorate quite quickly. Within maybe 3 to 6 months, they've dropped down a peg or two in terms of their emotional closeness. Friendships are very dependent on the time we invest in them, and there are very, very specific frequencies with which we need to see people in each of these circles in order to keep somebody in that circle. So that inner core of shoulders to cry on friends of about 5 people, you need to see them at least once a week, or maybe phone them perhaps, certainly you need to contact them at least once a week. If you don't see them for several weeks, already the relationship is just being tested a little bit, and if that carries on, they will drop down into the next layer.
Of course, coronavirus has affected us all, but mostly we haven't been able to touch each other. Is touch important?
Touch is hugely important in building and maintaining friendships generally, and of course, family relationships. And I think we underestimate how important it actually is, because it's sort of going on below the radar of consciousness in many ways. But if you actually watch people, you know, the next time we're able to gather in a pub or something like that, you know, have a look at what people are doing. And they're constantly touching each other during the course of a conversation. A pat on the shoulder, a stroke on the arm, an arm over the shoulder, a hug or what have you. And it turns out that how often we do that and where we're allowed to touch people depends critically on the quality of the relationship, so the emotional quality of the relationship. That inner core of 5 people in the shoulders to cry on friends have much more freedom of movement in where they're allowed to touch you and where you're allowed to touch them than, say, the people even in the sympathy group circle of 15, and they're certainly way ahead of people in the further circles out, till you eventually get to strangers. And strangers are only permitted, and we've looked at this across all the cultures essentially of Europe, east to west, as far east as Russia, in fact, and north to south from Finland to Italy, and indeed in Japan, a completely different culture, of course. They're all pretty much the same. The only place you're allowed to touch strangers is with a handshake, and it's sort of almost as though you're saying, I'm extending an element of friendly touch here, but I'm keeping you as far away from my body as is possible. Because that's kind of why, you know, we get uncomfortable in a lift where people are crammed together and we silence descends and we all stare at our feet, because the touch is a kind of intimate interaction, and it is only permitted of relationships that have the appropriate degree of intimacy.
I wondered if there is a great deal of difference between the genders in how they make and maintain friends. I mean, for instance, it would seem to me that men don't seem to have so many friends, or at least not so many friends that they can really talk to. But that's obviously an uneducated take from me.
No, I think you're perfectly right. I mean, I think very often you know, a lot of these things, I mean, we live immersed in this social world of friendship and relationships. And so intuitively, you know, we spot these things. Sometimes they're a surprise when they're pointed out, but very often the response I think we get is, you know, oh, yes, I knew that, but I'd never realised it because I hadn't thought about it. And one of those is a very striking difference between men and women in the style of their social relationships, their friendships, which the more you look at it, the more apparent it becomes. So there is a tendency for women to have more friends than men, and for those friends to be more emotionally deep, more intimate than is the case with men. I'm kind of struck by the fact that men's friendships are somewhat casual. You know, it's almost as though the identity of the friend is much less important than that they belong to the little clique or group or club, if you like, that someone associates with. So men's friendships are a bit more clubby in that sense, whereas women's friendships are much more focused on particular people. And one reflection of that is this phenomenon of a best friend forever, or BFF, as it's sometimes known in the popular literature, is very, very common for women, but really seems to be quite rare for men. So this is somebody typically the same sex, so the woman's best friend will be another woman in, I don't know, 85% of cases. And men sort of don't seem to have those in the same way. If you ask somebody who's your best friend, they will say, oh, Jimmy's my best friend. But, you know, Jimmy is only as good as the fact that he's round the corner or accessible. If Jimmy sort of wanders off to the other side of the world, then you know, you'll go and find Pete, who will substitute perfectly adequately.
And that doesn't happen for women, absolutely. I wonder why friendships end.
Mostly, I think it comes down to a breakdown of trust, but that tends to produce a catastrophic end. So in that sense, the end of friendships that end catastrophically like that are very similar to breakups between romantic partners or between family members. So family members or family-based relationships are usually very tolerant of minor breaches of trust and courtesy and all these other things that we do because we take family for granted. And they'll you know, sort of make allowances for you. But there comes a point where even the most patient of family members can be tried too far. And at that point, the relationship just collapses in much the same way that a romantic relationship is very tolerant. But at some point, too many straws on the camel's back and it just collapses catastrophically. That can happen with very good friends. It's probably a bit rarer because most friendships actually end quietly as a result of simply not seeing the person. If you don't see the person, the emotional quality of that friendship will just quietly subside, as it were, and they'll drift down from being what was once a good friend whom you saw quite regularly to being somebody I once knew, an acquaintance. I haven't seen them for years. I don't really know much about them anymore. And that tends to happen simply as a consequence of, you know, just not seeing them anymore. Doesn't have to be catastrophic, no big rows, nothing like that. You know, if suddenly you realise that they're letting you down a bit more than you would wish, you just stop seeing them. You tend not to have it out with them and shout at them. Whereas with kind of very intimate friends, so thinking of best friends forever, perhaps, or romantic partners or very close family relationships, those will end catastrophically and they are almost irreparable. You know, if a relationship dies quietly away, it's possible to rekindle it again down the road, as it were. But if a relationship breaks down catastrophically, it is almost never repaired very easily. And this is why you get these sort of deathbed reconciliations that, you know, seem to happen more than one realises. And what is surprising is how often family relationships break down like that. I'm, you know, particularly family relationships, because they're really the cavalry who will come racing over the hill to pick you up when everybody else has abandoned you. There's that something about family relationships that gives it this extra edge in these terms. But, you know, if you upset them, you've just lost the cavalry.
Yeah, yeah. How has social media impacted on our ability to make and maintain friends?
Social media has clearly been incredibly successful in the, what, less than 20 years it's really been around. And the one thing it does very well, I think, of course, actually, that this was the reason why it was first developed, was, you know, the fact that, you know, people who'd been at college together were going to coming to the end of the course and going to be scattered all over the world. And it was just a way of keeping those friendships going after you'd all left university. And I think it has been extraordinarily successful. But there is a sense in which the quality of interactions you have over social media in any form just aren't quite the same as face-to-face interactions. So, you know, this is reflecting the fact that jokes don't work very well on email, for example, or indeed on something, a text-based medium like Facebook or the like. And it's because there's a loss of immediacy in the interaction. You know, by the time you get the reply, you've probably forgotten what the joke was that you sent. Or, you know, things that you would fall off your stool laughing about if somebody said it in the pub, just in the cold light of day, in a text medium, just don't seem to work. And video media like Zoom and Skype, they're better, but they also have their clunkiness and constraints. So my inclination really has come round to viewing them as very good sticking plasters. They really do work quite well. They do stop a relationship dying quietly if you can't see the person. But at some point, if you don't get together once in a while, maybe only once a year, once every couple of years, that friendship is going to die quietly no matter how many times you contact the person on Facebook. They're going to just drift down from what once been a very close friend to an acquaintance. There is one exception to this, I think, and that is, you know, those one or two, and it really is only one or two, really good friends that you establish at some early point in your life, very often at secondary school, perhaps university or somewhere like that. Those relationships will survive extremely well, and you can pick them up where you left them off, even after, you know, long gaps. But they're very, very rare. Most relationships, friendships, even of that period in your life, just don't survive. Facebook, texting, even the telephone. None of these digital media seem to have the quality of being able to stare into the whites of somebody's eyes across the pub table, or you know, reach out and give them a pat on the shoulder. That sort of personal space issue seems to be so important to the quality of relationships.
And of course, that's all been highlighted by lockdown. So, I mean, finally, given this time that hanging out with our friends has been illegal, as we slowly get back to normal, do you think that this will have a long-lasting implication for our relationships?
It is certainly the big worry for everybody that somehow this social isolation that's been going on in lockdown is going to change our social world. I'm a bit more upbeat, I must say. I don't really think it will. It in a few cases, there may be some renegotiation of a friendship that has to be done just to establish, you know, whether you're both still interested in maintaining the relationship, because one of you might have discovered, leaning over the garden fence, that a near neighbour is actually rather good fun to be with, and they want to make room in their friendship circle for this person, and you might be squeezed out. But by and large, I don't think the core friendships that you have will be greatly affected by, you know, even what has been an intermittent year of lockdowns, one after the other. Those relationships will kind of tend to survive, providing you make an effort, I think, to go out and sort of renew them, meet up with those friends as soon as is reasonable possible. I think if you don't meet up, there's a signal there that, well, maybe they're not interested in us anymore. But if you meet up, I think it will just pick up the relationship where it was. I think there will be some changes, but they'll be a little further out, perhaps in that 50 layer of friends that you don't normally see very often, and perhaps there'll be some shuffling around in there. But as I say, you know, you may well have met new people, because for the first time in your life, you've been talking to the neighbours in your street and discovered that some of them actually are really interesting people, and you want to develop better friendships with them. And because your time is limited and you can only have so many friends at any one time, well, if you take on new friends, you are going to squeeze some other ones out. But, you know, we'll all be sort of shuffling around friendships a little bit, but it's not going to be a major social disaster. Just the same in many ways as we'll be back to shaking hands with everybody that we meet in the street or when we're introduced to people within no time at all. I think that is just such an ingrained social response. As was very clear, if you remember, when we first had lockdown and so on, and we weren't supposed to be touching other people, the poor politicians were forever getting themselves in trouble because they simply could not help themselves, just automatically reaching out to shake hands with people in the street and so on. So I think we'll do that. Elbow bumping will disappear like a bad dream.
Ravan, it's a fantastically interesting book, and I highly recommend it to all of our listeners. There's so much more that we haven't been able to delve into during this interview, but thank you so much for talking to me. The book's called Friends, Understanding the Power of Our Most Important Relationships. It's by Robin Dunbar, and it's published by Little Brown. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to my producer, Nora Hull, and researcher, Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.